good evening. Good evening, everyone. This is Lou Cavalier. You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, here we are near the end of March. Here in Maryland, it's a chilly day. Beautiful day, though. A lot of the flowering trees are blossoming. Or beginning to, anyway. So spring is in the air, even if it is a little on the chilly side. So I hope you all listening are also having a fine day and a fine evening. And here it is on the air. Well, just a week and a half, approximately, till Easter, Resurrection Day. So one of the great days of the Christian calendar, perhaps the greatest one of all. Now, we'll lead off tonight with a little article that appeared in the Gateway Pundit. They often have some things that you won't find in some of the other sources. And this one talks about spiritual war. Top exorcists ask Pope Leo to increase number and training of specialized priests to combat surge in occultism and satanic practices. Well, this is a little bit out of the mainstream of ordinary Christian experience. I certainly have never experienced anything like this. Well, I take that back. Let me go back to perhaps as much as 30-odd years ago. We had a relative who was then young, and I think Elizabeth, my late wife, talked about this more than once on the radio, but it's worth repeating. That relative was a young person at the time. We saw that person from time to time when we would go up to Elizabeth's family's location where she grew up. Once, in I believe it was at the time of some relative's death, but I don't remember the exact circumstances. And this young person said these words. I think that Elizabeth was trying to console one of the old friends or whoever had passed away. And the young person said, in response to what Elizabeth had talked about, "Now she's talking about heaven." And a voice just like that, a voice that was in no way the ordinary voice of that young person. And it was so shocking that I remember it vividly to this day, as did Elizabeth throughout her life. Now, was that just epilepsy? I don't think so. I never heard of an epileptic person speaking in a strange voice like that. And the person was in complete control of what he or she said. There was no indication of any kind of loss of control in terms of bodily functions, at least. It wasn't like having a seizure. So I would have to say that was the one time in my life when I experienced what I would classify as a demonic control over a person's willpower. So I don't pass judgment on this. I'm not Catholic, but I certainly would have to say the Bible is clear that demons do exist, particularly in the New Testament, as Jesus was ministering on the earth. The demons seem to have come out in huge numbers to try and oppose him. And this one famous incident, those of you familiar with the Bible recognize the situation at once. It's in Mark and also in Matthew. In Mark, particularly, the Gospel of Mark, it's chapter 5, and they have a quote in verse 9. This is the man who was chained up, but would break the chains. In the country, some versions say Gadarenes, some Gerasenes. It's not quite sure which is the correct. It could be a copying mistake. But Jesus asked this man, "What is your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And this, of course, was a demon speaking. A legion in the Roman army had, I believe, 6,000 men. So this is indicating there were a lot of demons in there. This is the incident, of course, where the demons plead with Jesus, don't send us to the abyss, to hell. And they said, there's a herd of pigs down there. Let us go into the pigs. And Jesus gave them permission, and they went into the pigs, and all the pigs ran off the cliff and were drowned in the sea. So, a famous incident that seems to tell that demons were recognized as something very unusual in the New Testament. Not too uncommon, though. There are several incidents. There was one in the sermon our pastor gave just this past Sunday, talking about where the transfiguration has occurred. Jesus with the three disciples, Peter, James, and John, come down off the hillside. And there's a crowd gathered around because the boy is demon-possessed. The father asked Jesus if he can to cast the demon out. And Jesus said, what do you mean, if I can? And the father says, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. And Jesus goes on to cast out the demon, and the boy is made whole again. Well, I'm just going to read a small part of this. It says in the article, this, by the way, was by Paul Saran, Gateway Pundit, March 23rd, 2026. One need not be a trained exorcist to recognize all around us that today's world is experiencing a surge in occult and satanic practices. But the men who actually are the top exorcists in the Roman Catholic Church have gone up to Pope Leo XIV with a single plea to reinforce their numbers. Leo received representatives on the International Association of Exorcists in a private audience on Friday, March 13th. Perhaps not the most auspicious day. And it goes on to talk about that. I'm going to skip down in the interest of time. Let's see. At the end of the meeting with the Pope, Monsignor Olito and Father Dave Monty gave the Pope a metal image of St. Michael. Let's see now. The Pope thanked them for their work. And it says, according to Father Francesco Bamonti, Vice President of the AIE, which is the International Association of Exorcists, ignoring these phenomena leaves many faithful without an adequate response to grave spiritual suffering, sometimes pushing them toward inappropriate solutions. All right, well, you can take that for what it's worth. But I have to admit that one time is the only time in my life I actually thought that there was a demon inhabiting a human being. But there are, of course, many other instances in the Gospels, in the New Testament, and in many accounts of everyday life down through the centuries. Okay, a whole different topic now, from Zero Hedge, a little political thing, and disappeared Saturday, March 21st, authored by Steve Watson via Modernity News. Representative Luna drops Clinton Epstein bombshell. And it says Representative Anna Paulina Luna appeared on Bill Maher's show and confirmed what the Epstein document dumps have long hinted at. The former president, that is, Mr. Clinton, wasn't just flying on the Lolita Express. He was operating under an entirely different identity in the files. This revelation lands as the House Oversight Committee presses forward with its investigation, following the Justice Department's release of millions of pages under the Epstein Files Transparency Act, signed by President Trump. Lawmakers and victims are still pushing for the remaining 2.5 million documents that remain hidden or heavily redacted, according to recent reporting. Bill Clinton's connection to Jeffrey Epstein runs deep and well-documented. The former president flew on Epstein's private jet multiple times in the early 2000s, often for Clinton Foundation-related trips. And he maintained social ties with both Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell long after red flags emerged. He has repeatedly denied any knowledge of Epstein's crimes or visits to the island. Luna, and this again is Representative Anna Paulina Luna. Luna laid it out plainly during the interview with Bill Mayer. When Mayer asked about Hillary and why they had brought Hillary in for a questioning, he said, "You have Hillary Clinton come in? This is like 3 gazillion pages of men behaving badly, and the witness you want is a woman?" Luna shot back. She was issued, and this is a quote from Ms. Luna, she was issued a bipartisan subpoena, meaning the Democrats wanted her in too, because Bill Clinton was all over those logs, unquote. And Ms. Luna continued, "We can get at the whole Jeffrey Epstein ties because I actually talked to Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton specifically about that, presenting them with the actual document that showed that he had a complete other alias," unquote. And May responded, "You get a lot of information that we don't all have." Luna replied, "I'm happy to come back." Mayer closed, "We want you. I appreciate it," unquote. What was Bill Clinton doing with another alias? The question hangs heavy. In the files of a convicted child sex trafficker, a second identity isn't a coincidence. It's a red flag screaming for answers. This isn't the first time the Clintons have scrambled to contain the Epstein fallout. Bill Clinton's chief of staff raged after half-naked photos of the former president surfaced in the latest Epstein drop. Back in 2024, reports also revealed Clinton allegedly threatened Vanity Fair to kill articles about his, quote, good friend, unquote, Jeffrey Epstein. The pattern is clear. Suppression, denial, and now an alias. While the Clintons sat for depositions earlier this year, insisting they saw nothing wrong, Luna's committee work keeps peeling back layer after layer the deep state hoped would stay buried. The American people are watching. The files don't lie, and neither do the subpoenas. Every new detail like this alias proves why the fight for real accountability matters. Because when the powerful hide behind fake names and pedophile networks, it's not just scandal. It's a warning that the old guard still thinks the rules don't apply to them. Well, that was from Zero Hedge. The short form of the title is Complete Other Alias. That was by Tyler Durden, Saturday, March 21st, 2026. And apparently Tyler printed it, but it was authored by Steve Watson via modernity.news. And the earlier one about the exorcist was from the Gateway Pundit on March 23rd. Well, now we come to a little more practical matter. It's that time of year. The pollen is flying. I can see it on my car windshield every morning when I come out. And I'm thankfully not bothered greatly by allergies. I know one of my good friends that I used to carpool with had such allergies she had to get shots for them. And I'm sure some of you do too. So here's some hints. This came from the Washington Times, via the Associated Press, written by Kenya Hunter, Sunday, March 22nd, entitled, "Welcome to Allergy Season. Here's how to protect yourself." Dateline Atlantic. Allergy season can be miserable for tens of millions of Americans when trees, grass, and other pollens cause runny noses, itchy eyes, coughing, and sneezing. Where you live, what you're allergic to, and your lifestyle can make a big difference when it comes to the severity of your allergies. Experts point out that treatments for seasonal allergies have become more effective over the last decades. Here are some tips from experts to keep allergy symptoms at bay, maybe even enough to allow you to enjoy the outdoors. All right, first little subdivision. New cities top the list of allergy capitals. The Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America issued an annual ranking of the most challenging cities to live in if you have allergies. based on over-the-counter medicine use, pollen counts, and the number of available allergy specialists. This year, the top five cities are Boise, Idaho, San Diego, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Provo, Utah, and Rochester, New York. Next, pollen helps plants reproduce and makes us miserable. Pollen is a powdery substance made by seed-producing plants and trees that is part of their reproductive process. Earlier in the spring, tree pollen, is the main culprit. After that, grasses pollinate, followed by weeds in the late summer and early fall. Some of the most common tree pollens that cause allergies include birch, cedar, cottonwood, maple, elm, oak, and walnut, according to the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America. Grasses that cause symptoms include Bermuda grass, Johnson grass, rye grass, and Kentucky bluegrass. Next, here's how to track pollen levels. Pollen trackers can help you decide when to go outside. The American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology tracks levels through a network of counting stations across the U.S., and those counts are available at its website and via email. Again, that organization was called the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. Next, the first step is to try to avoid pollen altogether. The best and first step to controlling allergies is avoiding exposure. Keep the windows in your car and your home closed, even when it's nice outside. I think that's just forcing some talking. Could be a test of allergies, though, come to think of it. Going on with the article, if you go outside, wearing long sleeves can help keep pollen off your skin to help ward off allergic reactions. That, according to Dr. James Baker, an allergist at the University of Michigan. It also provides some sun protection. When you get home, change your clothes and shower daily to ensure all the pollen is off of you, including your hair. If you can't wash your hair every day, try covering it when you go outside with a hat or scarf. Don't get in the bed with your outside clothes on because the pollen will follow you. It's also useful to rinse your eyes and nose with saline to remove any pollen. Experts said. And the same masks that got us through the pandemic can protect you from allergies, though they won't help with eye symptoms. The next topic, how to relieve allergy symptoms. Over-the-counter nasal sprays are among the most effective treatments for seasonal allergies, experts said. But patients often use them incorrectly, irritating parts of the nose, said Dr. Kathleen May, an allergist at Augusta University in Georgia. She suggested angling the nozzle outward towards your ear rather than sticking it straight up in your nose. Over-the-counter allergy pills like Claritin, Allegra, and Zyrtec are helpful but may not be as effective as quickly since they're taken by mouth. If your allergy symptoms are impacting your quality of life, like causing you to lose sleep or lose focus at work or school, it might be time to consider making an appointment with an allergist. There are medications that can train your immune system not to overreact to allergens. Some remedies for allergy relief that have been circulating on social media are suggested by celebrities, like incorporating local honey into your diet to expose yourself to pollen, have been debunked. Dr. Shyam Joshi, an allergist at Oregon Health and Science University, said that's because the flowers that bees pollinate typically don't contain the airborne pollen that causes allergy symptoms. And the last subdivision is allergy season changing. Winters are milder and growing seasons are longer as the climate is changing, meaning there's more opportunity for pollen to stay in the air, resulting in longer and more severe allergy seasons. Last year was one of the most intense allergy seasons on record, especially in the southeast US. And it mentions that at the bottom of the article, the Associated Press Health and Science Department receives support from the Howard Hughes Medical Institute Science and Educational Media Group and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. The IP is solely responsible for all content. And that was from the Washington Times on Sunday, March 22nd. Now, we move on to a little bit of Big Brother topics. Let me interrupt for a minute, though, and just say you're listening to The Divided Kingdom. I'm Luke Carvalho. If you'd like to write to me, I always love to get letters. If you can make a little contribution to keeping the program on the air, that would be great. But even if you can't, I'd love to get your letters. You can write to me, Lou, L-O-U, Carvalho, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y. And the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. That's Lou Carvalho, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And you can check out our website to find out some of the other venues that you can listen to the program on. Of course, you can listen directly at WWCR.com on their internet. They have, I think, four transmitters, and you can go to their website ahead of time and just see which transmitter this program is being put out on. I think it's number two, but I can't swear to that. But if you go to their program schedule, Thursday nights, 8 p.m. is the broadcast day and time. And as I say, the frequency, maybe I didn't say that before, but it's 4.840 megahertz on the shortwave band. 4.840 megahertz, 8 p.m., Thursdays. You can also listen to us directly by going to that website if you don't have a shortwave radio. And if you can't make it on the designated day and time, there's a repeat Saturday mornings on the shortwave and on the internet site. On the shortwave, the Saturday morning at 8 a.m. frequency is 7.490. You can also hear us by going on the internet to kstartalkradio.com and kingdomstarradio.com. And those two websites have an abundance of very fine programs. Some of them are new, some of them are repeats of classic programs, such as those with Dr. Stan Monteith and other fine speakers of the past, with many good interviews. Well, now getting back, I should say also you can go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and go to the archives, and you can pick the date you want. If you miss a particular one, you can just go to that date and listen any time of the day or night. Now we'll move to the New York Post. The high-tech scarecrows, that's in quotes, scarecrows, watching your every move and what they're really being used for. This is by Christian Oroz, I guess it's pronounced Orozco, O-R-O-Z-C-O, March 22nd, 2026. In the era of high-tech security systems, the scope of surveillance technology could sometimes be taken for granted. While privacy remains a central issue in security camera discourse, one piece of technology is being deployed in public areas where no one should reasonably expect it. And it's helping in more ways than just recording empty parking lots. And here's a name I had never heard before. Cameras on wheels, or COWS, C-O-W-S, are popping up in business parking lots, construction sites, car lots, events, and even in communities recovering from wildfires. They show a couple of good pictures if you go to the website. The solar-powered security systems come equipped with license plate recognition and multiple pan, tilt, zoom cameras that offer high-definition footage, a responded to Niles Coates, Vice President of Sales at ECAM, a Texas-based manufacturer of mobile surveillance units, who spoke to KTLA about the technology. And I checked out, KTLA is a Southern California TV, and I assume radio station, I believe based in Los Angeles. And handheld zoom cameras, I presume, would simply mean that they can do all kinds of angles, and perhaps, although it doesn't quite say this, they can be controlled remotely to check out different things that are going on in the parking lot or whatever place they're located. Now, going on with the article, their signature look, a long white pole with blue lights at the top, serve as a scarecrow to would-be crime. And I'll interrupt there. I guess they mean that they're going to scare off the criminals. So they serve as a scarecrow to would-be crime, according to Logan Harris, the CEO of military surveillance contractor Spotter Global, S-P-O-T-T-E-R Global, who told KTLA they are referred to as the farm's bodyguard because, quote, they have bright flashing lights on them, cameras, and they look kind of scary, unquote. While crime deterrence is one of the main objectives for installing a cowl, the Simpsons go even further, as Coates told KTLA, that while their presence does reduce the risk of crime, quote, when activity escalates, our team can dispatch directly to local guard partners, as well as law enforcement, unquote. The towers, connected through cell bandwidth or Wi-Fi to provide an ever-watchful eye, have helped law enforcement thwart a copper wire theft ring and capture mall shoplifters, according to KTLA. A copper wire theft ring. This is Lou speaking now. Reminds me of the idea that pennies are supposed to be discontinued, at least the manufacture of them. And they say, from what I've heard, that the copper in the pennies is worth more than the pennies are. The copper is worth far more than one penny per penny. I can remember back when I was a young man, I used to work in the maintenance shop for summer jobs, and the electricians were always looking for unused wire. Not that they stole it, but that if it was leftover wire, they would get to take it and sell it. I guess that was one of the privileges of the job. So getting back, Ventura County, that would be in California, Ventura County's sheriff's office commander, Eric Tennyson, told KTLA that they were also deployed in the aftermath of the 2024 mountain fire to provide, quote, a level of comfort for those residents who are still living in the area, knowing that the sheriff's office had some extra eyes on the area, unquote. Again, what does COW stand for? COW stands for cameras on wheels. Some cows have gunshot detection sensors, which can help with triangulating the location of shootings, Harris told KTLA. The Clovis police, now I would think that would be New Mexico, but maybe there's a Clovis, California. I'm not quite sure about that. The Clovis police deployed a cow last year, according to KSFN Fresno, where the multi-camera cow would be posted unattended, quote, at community events, high traffic areas, and places seeing crime spikes, unquote. So the next time you see blue lights in the sky, remember the eye of the cow is always watching. And that again was from the New York Post by Christian Orozco, March 22nd, 2026. Well, I must say, now I'm curious. I'm going to have to look out and see if I see any of those cows out there with the blue lights on top. Might see some. Oh, I was going to bring an article, but I can just give you a summary from my home state of Maryland, my Fresno state. I'm an old Massachusetts native, but been living in Maryland now for over 50 years. One of the things in the local newspaper, and I live on the eastern shore of Maryland, across Chesapeake Bay from D.C. and Baltimore. One of the things in our local paper last week, or it might have even been on the weekend, was that the state has mandated certain things that must be funded for school systems, local school systems, in down here in Maryland. Unlike my native state of Massachusetts, the cities and towns don't run the schools or many of the other functions. The schools are run by the counties. So, for example, in suburban Washington, we have two gigantic counties, Montgomery County and Prince George's County. And there's a Baltimore County surrounding Baltimore City. Baltimore City is one of the few cities in Maryland that has its own school system because, of course, it's so large. And we're out here in the comparative boondocks, the rural area, and the population, of course, is much, much lower than the big cities across the bay, so that it sometimes is tough on these small communities to raise the money for taxes. Now, what has the state done? It has told the counties, you will fund all these programs, but we're not going to give you the money for it. In other words, we're telling you what you got to have, but we're not going to pay for it. That's typical of the state. And the governor, whose name escapes me now, I don't like to say it, and he's probably going to be running for president. So if you see governor of Maryland, you know who we mean. And of course, it's the legislature, too, is pretty much one-sided because of the simple fact that although the eastern shore of Maryland and the far western end of Maryland and much of the other rural areas of Maryland tend to be Republican, the big cities, Baltimore, and those cities that surround Washington, D.C., tend to vote Democrat, and they have the big populations. So, and the name just hit me, Governor Wes Moore is the present governor of Maryland. And as I say, it's not entirely his fault, but I'm sure he is his hand in the cookie jar. But because the Democrats prevail and they like to spend money, well, naturally, they're telling the little counties, you know, you figure out how to get the money. We can't give you the money, but we're still going to tell you how to spend it. And that you've got to spend it, that you can't, at least in certain areas, you can't just use your own good judgment. We'll tell you how to do it, but we won't give you the money for it. All right, so Wes Moore, remember that name. He's probably going to be running for president in 2028. I won't vote for him. Although I think he has some good points, I won't be totally one-sided, but also this business of redistricting. You know that the Eastern Shore has one delegate who's a Republican out of all the counties on the Eastern Shore, and now they want to take that one away by redistricting so that they'll make some kind of gerrymandering where the votes from the Western Shore will once again overwhelm the votes from the eastern side of Chesapeake Bay and take away that one Republican representative. Well, anyway, enough of politics. Oh, but not quite enough, because here's something about Governor Gavin Newsom. This is from Fox News, March 22nd, 2026. Newsom's claim that Texas and Florida are the real high-tax states was picked apart by expert and was fatally flawed. This is by Andrew Mark Miller. Again, Fox News, March 22nd. Fox News Digital spoke to Just Facts President, that's the name of the organization, Just Facts, President James Agresti, A-G-R-E-S-T-I, about what the data really shows about taxes in California. California Governor Gavin Newsom, I'll interject there again, another probable presidential candidate. All these governors Well, anyway, California Governor Gavin Newsom's repeated claims in recent weeks promoting his state as more tax-friendly than Florida and Texas don't add up, according to an expert who ran the numbers. Now, a word of caution here. I used to have a book, and I don't know if I still have it or not. A little thin book, but great for a math teacher, which is what I was. And the name of the book was simple, How to Lie with Statistics. And there's an old joke that used to be said that there are three kinds of lies. There are simple lies. Worse than that, there are damned lies. And worst of all, there are statistics. Well, now get into this. Governor, I'll just repeat this sentence. California Governor Gavin Newsom's repeated claims in recent weeks promoting his state as more tax-friendly than Florida and Texas don't add up. And Mr. Newsom stated, quote, Texas and Florida are the real high-tax states. And he posted that on X, explaining on stage at SXSW. Again, I guess that's a radio or TV station. That in Austin, Texas, that California has the most, quote, progressive tax rates in America, unquote. And while Gavin took shots at the tax burdens in Florida and Texas, Gavin Newsom said, your middle class pays more taxes in Texas than our middle class in California. It's a great mythology. It's just the richest of the rich come here because they can avoid paying a damn penny, unquote. And he was talking there about Texas, the richest of the rich coming to Texas. The comments drew pushback from conservatives on social media, including Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and from Just Facts President James Agresti, who says he looked into a number of different angles to determine the validity of Newsom's claims. He stated, I looked at how much is each state taxing each of the citizens on average. So if you look at California, they collect about $10,000 a year in taxes on every person in the state, whereas the figures for Texas and Florida are only about $5,000. In other words, about half as much, Agresti told Fox News Digital. And he went on, however, California is a higher income state, so I also looked at it as a percentage of the state's economies, and what I found is that California taxes about 14% of its economy, as opposed to 9% for Texas and Florida, unquote. Just Facts broke those taxes down in a recent study and found that California imposes some of the highest taxes in the nation, with a top personal income tax rate of 13.3%, while both Texas and Florida have no state income tax. Property taxes in California account for about 2.8% of personal income, slightly lower than Texas at 3.6%, and close to Florida's 2.6%. But measured as a share of home values, California's rates are generally lower than both states. But in other areas, California is largely more burdensome. The state's unemployment insurance tax rate matches Texas at 6.2%, but is higher than Florida's at 5.4%. And California has a higher statewide sales tax. Its sales tax is 7.2%, compared to 6.2% in Texas and 6.0% in Florida. And I'll just stick in, this is Lou speaking now, I'll just stick in that Maryland is 6%, just like Florida. Going on now, drivers in California face significantly higher gas taxes as well, paying 70.9 cents per gallon, more than triple Texas's 20 cents, and well above Florida's 40.3 cents tax. And let me go down just a little bit here. A Wallthrub 2025 analysis ranking U.S. states by overall tax burden showed California coming in overall fourth behind Vermont, New York, and Hawaii. On a per capita basis, California also collects significantly more in state and local taxes than either state, according to data from the Tax Foundation. And he goes on to some other things, which I think would be pretty boring to go into in depth. He makes some statements based upon the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, which he says is widely used by mainstream news outlets and experts, but is, quote, fatally flawed because it does not account for all forms of income or all taxes. Let me jump down to just get a few of the key highlights here. All right, let's see now. Agresti says Newsom is a, quote, master of twisting statistics to paint a picture that is the exact inverse of reality, unquote. And he pointed to the governor's claim that the exodus of residents due to high taxes is a myth. Mr. Agresti said, here's the facts. According to his own, that is Newsom's own Secretary of State, every year of Newsom's governorship, more people have moved out of California into other states than have moved from other states into California. Agresti, who has posted the data on his website, said, in fact, over the time of his governorship, about 1.5 more million people have left California than moved in. And he explained some of the use of statistics and how Newsom is trying to bend the statistics to his advantage. And skipping down, it says, additionally, Agresti pointed to data that shows California has a greater rate of poverty than any other state in the nation, and as well as electricity prices that are more than twice the national average. And Mr. Agresti said in quotes, when you look at California as a whole, it is one of the highest tax states in the nation. And also there's a lot of fallout from Newsom's policies that make it one of the most expensive places to live in the entire United States. Unquote. And it says Fox News Digital reached out to Newsom's office for comment, and that's all it says. So I presume they took the attitude of not commenting. Well, I've known some people to listen to the show that were glad to get out of California. I have some relatives out there. I think they'd like to leave, but they're established with good jobs, and moving is probably a little more than they are willing to attempt right now. But I would never live in California myself. It just doesn't appeal to me. Well, all right, that again was from Fox News, March 22nd, 2026. Well, we have about 15 minutes left. Let's see what else we have here. Again, my name is Luke Caravelli. You'd like to correspond, you can write to me at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Well, here's something about the attacks on Christianity. We've heard a lot about that in the last few years. This is from the Western Journal by Michael Austin, March 21st, 2026. And the headline reads, Christian Street Preachers Fight Back with Lawsuits After Getting Arrested in Major American City. What city? Well, I'll keep you guessing for a minute, but I'll reveal that real soon. It reads, America is far from a hotbed of Christian persecution. But that unfortunate distinction, it should read, mostly belonging to the Islamic and communist countries. But some left-wing American cities are cracking down on the Christian faith more fervently in recent years. According to a new lawsuit from the American Center for Law and Justice, abbreviated ACJ, ACLJ, Chicago. There we go. There's the city. Chicago recently detained three Christian street preachers, all of whom were, quote, wrongfully arrested for nothing more than sharing the gospel in public, unquote. The legal advocacy group said in a March 14th release that street preacher Brett Rayo, R-A-I-O, was arrested and charged for sharing the gospel in Millennium Park. Although his case was dismissed before trial, with the ACLJ showing video evidence that exonerated him, his two friends, Retic and Perez, were soon arrested at the same spot. Beyond getting slapped with spurious charges, the three friends were held in jail for more than 7 hours. This is no coincidence, is a quote. This is no coincidence. It is a deliberate effort to silence religious expression, the ACLJ said. And ACLJ is, again, the American Center for Law and Justice. Chicago law, quote, only requires permits for amplification that exceeds conventional levels at 100 feet away, unquote, meaning that preachers are allowed to use it as long as they follow the rules. But police are simply arresting any preacher who uses amplification at all, according to the ACLJ. And the group, the ACLJ, says, quote, they are not taking any measures to determine if the speech actually violates the noise ordinance. They're just pulling up in their squad cars and immediately arresting the preachers. This has all the markings of unconstitutional targeting of preachers, displaying an unlawful anti-Christian animus. And with today's lawsuit, we have taken major legal action to fight back, unquote. The lawsuit accused the city of Chicago and its law enforcement apparatus of violating the constitutional rights of the three Christians. Their fundamental freedoms were infringed upon when they were targeted, quote, by their religious message, unquote, and unlawfully silenced, according to the ACLJ. The lawsuit also argued that the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act was violated, with the Chicago noise policy marking a, quote, significant burden on our clients' religious exercise. And in another statement, the ACLJ, again, that's the American Center for Law and Justice, stated, unfortunately, we know that this policy in Chicago goes well beyond these incidents and is part of a far-reaching policy at one of the busiest public sites in the city. Free speech is not a privilege granted by the government. It is a God-given right enshrined in our Constitution, unquote. The ACLJ warned that Chicago officials are not allowed to use regulations as a pretense for religious discrimination, vowing to keep the gospel airwaves open in the Windy City. Again, that was by Michael Austin in the Western Journal, March 21st, 2026. And I didn't have time to get it, but a little interesting thing that was in both the Washington Times and the Gateway Pundit, and probably also in the Washington Post, although I didn't get a chance to check there. Prince George's County, where I lived and worked for many years, is the Maryland County on the northeast side of Washington, D.C., of the capital city. There's a famous Fort Washington, named for the first president, in the southern, or I guess you would call it the central location in the county, and apparently some pipe bombs were found there recently. It didn't go into much detail about how long they might have been there, whether they were terrorist-related. It really just was the bare bones. But I'm going to have to see if I can get more information on that at a later time. With the war in Iran going on, it does seem questionable whether or not this could have been planted by someone, shall we say, sympathies to Iran, radical Islamic sympathies, and so forth. And speaking speaking of things with Iran, here's an article from the Washington Times. I think we have just enough time for this and maybe one more. This is by Ben Wolfgang, Tuesday, March 17th, entitled Back to the Future. Despite tech advances, age-old, quote, continuities of war, unquote, key to U.S.-Iran conflict. And there's 3 points under the heading What to Know. First point, the U.S.-Iran war reflects familiar themes from past Middle Eastern conflicts. Second point, controlling the Strait of Hormuz is crucial for all parties involved. You can't, I'll just interject there, you can't turn on the news today without hearing about the Strait of Hormuz and how it's creating a bottleneck in trying to get tankers out, causing a minor energy crisis that could develop into a major energy crisis. And the third point, long-range missiles remain essential for both offense and defense. And it says a version of this story appeared in the Daily Threat Status newsletter from the Washington Times. The U.S.-Iran war is certainly a modern fight, but many of its overreaching themes feel familiar, deeply reminiscent of past Middle East wars, and in some ways unaffected by massive leaps in military technology. Oil prices, economic fallout, and domestic politics are at the heart of the conflict, and the decision-making processes of all major players, controlling territory, including the strategically vital Strait of Hormuz, is paramount. Capturing key assets, such as Iran's enriched uranium stockpiles, appears necessary. Building international coalitions, as the Trump administration is now racing to do, is vital. Targeting an enemy's leadership is a pivotal step toward achieving one's goal. Long-range missiles are irreplaceable for both offensive and defensive missions. Traditional air power, featuring tried-and-true fighter jets, piloted by the world's best-trained crews, has been the deciding factor in giving the U.S. and its ally, Israel, the upper hand. Analysts in the Iran war show that many fundamentals of military clashes remain constant, no matter how many drones, robots, space-based capabilities, laser weapons, or artificial intelligence-powered cyber tools are introduced. At the most elemental level is what former White House National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster called the continuities of war. A conflict is inherently human, political, uncertain, and subject to a contest of wills between the combatants. And this is a fairly lengthy article, so I know I won't be able to finish it all. Again, if you would like to read it all, you can go to the Washington Times website and look for Tuesday, March 17th, with the short form of the title, Back to the Future. But I'll read a little bit of it as time permits. Some specialists argue that the way the Iran war has unfolded could be a blow to futurists. That's in quotes, futurists in Western military industrial circles who believe the latest technology alone will define modern wars and single-handedly determine the victor. Here we have a quote from Amos Fox, a retired Army officer and Arizona State University professor. And he studies military technology and strategy extensively. Mr. Fox says, quote, so-called futurists, technologists, technocrats, push unproven and habitually failed visions of the future of war, while casting aside the steady march of the continuities in war. Continuities include the fact that winning a war is typically, or does typically take an army to control the terrain, governance, and population in the area being fought over, Mr. Fox told the Washington Times. It takes an army to defeat an army. Mr. Fox and other critics of futurists dogma say cutting-edge technology plays a crucial role in modern warfare, but the distinctions that they draw center on whether that technology in and of itself can fundamentally alter the nature of war, or whether core principles of warfare should be rewritten solely because of technological advancements. And there's no substitute, this is another section of the article, no substitute for humans. Multiple examples are unfolding in real time. Israel said Tuesday, now this would have been a week ago, that it killed top Iranian security official Ali Larijani in an airstrike, and other key Iranian decision makers have also been killed in recent days. Yet some key leaders, especially those whom analysts describe as in the second tier of the country's leadership structure, have at times been difficult to track down. U.S. and Israel have no easy way to find and remove all of Iran's enriched uranium or other key components of its nuclear program if they use only drones, robots, or cyber tools. Fully addressing both issues seems to require the most traditional of all military assets, troops on the ground inside enemy territory. That's a good place to stop there with a quick summary. There's much more to the article. Again, if you want to read it in depth, you should be able to find it at the Washington Times. Go to Tuesday, March 17, St. Patrick's Day, and look for the one that begins with the title, Back to the Future. We've got just a very short time left, just to mention a couple of other things. Zero Hedge, in an article this past Sunday, March 22nd, more than 5,500 residents ordered to evacuate in Hawaii over the, I guess it's pronounced Dodgy Dam, D-O-D-G-Y. And it says that dam is continuing to worsen with rainy weather and a threat to the integrity of that 120-year-old dam. And the island Oahu, under the capital Honolulu, is forecast to face severe rains, capable of bringing flash floods and landslides over the next several days. Well, again, that you can check out by going to Zero Hedge, authored by Tyler Durden. More than 5,500 residents ordered to evacuate in Hawaii over the Dodgy Dam. Sunday, March 22nd. Well, our music is coming on. That means the program is expanded this full hour. I want to thank you all for listening. If you want to write to me, write to Lou Caroli, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thanks again for listening, and tune in again next week. Good night.